Hello everyone, it's Simone Tagliapietra speaking, research fellow at Bruegel. Today here at Bruegel we had the pleasure to host an event devoted to the European energy transition a year ahead of the 20s, with a long list of speakers, among which we have the honor to have here today for this podcast Philip Lowe, former Director General at the European Commission, and Alberto Potocnik, Director of the European Agency for Cooperation of Energy Regulators. Philip and Alberto, the first question that I would pose you, since was really at the core of our debate this morning, is the following. What are, in your view, the energy topics that will mark the next decade in Europe? Philip, if you...
Well, let's begin, and hello to everyone. This is a fascinating subject, full of uncertainties, but also challenges and opportunities together. As a whole in the world, the energy transition is as a concept, is connected with the idea, first of all, of ensuring secure, stable, sustainable supplies of energy. That is to say, in environmental parlance, with low emissions, CO2 emissions, in Asia too, with low air pollution as well. The transition is also associated with the increasing decentralization of sources of power, as renewables become the major source of electricity, alongside in some countries nuclear. And it's also associated with the notion of the digitalization of the economy, with more energy produced through electricity, and provided as electricity, with more decentralized production alongside consumption, and the capacity through digitalization to use energy more efficiently. We have a panorama here of exciting number of opportunities, which of course are going to be tackled differently in different regions and different countries of the world. Some of our existing countries in Europe have been traditionally dependent on coal, even though, for example, in Germany, they have made a massive attempt to move towards more renewables. Others have put more emphasis on nuclear, but it is undoubtedly the case that the input of renewables will be substantial in the future, in the next 20 years at least. And of course, renewables in the sense of solar or wind power is intermittent sources of energy. So a challenge is to provide some degree of resilience and consistency in the energy systems, particularly through storage capacities, but also through interconnection of networks. There we see very much the European dimension of more and more trade in energy across borders, whether it's electricity or gas, and more intelligent use of energy systems, which is made possible where there are common rules and common provisions to ensure that energy flows where the market wants it to flow.
Alberto, what's your take?
Well, first of all, hello to everyone from my side as well. I would like to follow up to what Sir Philip has mentioned about the challenges in Europe. I think some of the trends are already quite clear. Others will become apparent later on. I think it's clear that decarbonization will involve a greater share of renewables. It will involve probably a degree of electrification of the economies. Some of the renewables are intermittent and less predictable, and this is a challenge which market integration and market prices could support. I think at the end of the day, we will have a number of different objectives, and that the common factor on all these, a way of making sure that they can be pursued in a consistent way, is, in my view, reliance on markets, something that the European energy policy is supposed to promote, even though we see every now and then some sort of second thoughts at national level. Indeed, the system, the energy system of the future would have to be more resilient. Consumers can play a role. They can not only, as we've tried to do until now, have been able to choose their supplier, but also they can contribute to making the system more flexible by providing, for example, demand response and the new technologies. The digitalization of the system will make this easier, even though I think what we see at the moment is more of a behavioral challenge than a technological challenge. It's more how to engage consumers and to show that there is value for them in these activities. At the moment, even switching rates are still fairly low on average in Europe. The average European consumer switches every 16 years. It's his or her electricity supplier. I mean, we switch other suppliers much more often. And so there is an awareness-raising issue there. But then also, more and more clearly, it seems that the gas infrastructure can be used. Energy, at the moment, the challenge with using renewable energy is the fact that they are available at times when demand may not be there, and they are located typically away from the center of consumption. And if we can solve both the temporal and the geographical dimension, the potentials are almost unlimited. And here, you know, the idea, again, with the advance of technologies, of being able to transform electricity produced from renewables into gas, then use the existing infrastructure to store energy as gas, to transport energy, and over longer distances is more efficient to transport gas than electricity as an energy medium, and then use it either as gas where you cannot electrify or turn into electricity again. That's something that I think over the next probably 10, 15 years we'll have to look into, and because that's, to me, is the future of, or at least part of the future, of getting away with the current constraints or the current challenges we have in the use of renewables. And infrastructure for gas is there. We have to technically see whether, you know, for example, hydrogen can be mixed, to what extent it can be mixed with existing gas, or whether, you know, the infrastructure can be used just for hydrogen. Or so it's not, but my experience over the last years is that technologies have always been ahead of policy and regulation. So I'm not worried about, you know, the engineers will get it done. Is for policymakers and for regulators to make sure that there is enabling environment.
To allow it to happen.
Sure. But then the question is, what are the institutional changes required in Europe to unleash the energy transition? Because if you take, just for example, the case of an higher and higher share of renewables into the system, at a certain point, you will need, of course, a lot of interconnections, electricity interconnections also between countries, in order to allow that when the wind blows in the north, it can then go south, and when the sun shines in the south, the electricity can go north. So can we foster these exchanges still having 28, maybe in a month, 27 energy regulators?
Well, just before we go on to that subject, I just say that in terms of the definition of the energy transition, decarbonization, decentralization, digitalization, there is a fourth D, which is exciting, which is the democratization of energy, in the sense of empowerment of consumers, not just that they can use energy more intelligently through measurement, through electronics, etc. But they become partially producers, and they also are owners of storage facilities, whether in their cars or elsewhere. And I think this leads on to the issue of what's required for the energy transition. Is it new institutions? Is it what do we need? And well, frankly, surely we've got to first of all make sure that the regulations governing production and use of electricity, regulations both at national level and at European level, are opening up doors and windows for people to innovate and do things, and not preventing them from doing them. For example, if the costs of interconnection of consumers to the grid are dramatically different in different places, always where it, in some countries it's not possible for certain types of equipment to be joined, there's a problem there. And as far as interconnection is concerned, well, there can already be a challenge of infrastructure development inside a country, irrespective of what's needed between countries. And we've seen that to a certain extent in Germany, where the very substantial production of renewable energy in the north of Germany has resulted in flows, unplanned flows of electricity into Central and Eastern Europe, rather than into the areas of Germany in the south, which were in principle deficit, had a deficit of electric power. Now, a lot of people have said, well, do we really need these big infrastructures anymore, these transmission infrastructures, because everything is going to be local? Well, that is true for going to be true for a significant part of the economy, but we've got heavy industry, we've got road traffic and rail traffic, which requires electricity in large volumes, and therefore, there's going to be a need for some infrastructure improvement, as not just domestically, but internationally as well.
Yes, and we may even have, as I was saying before, renewable energy coming from far away, which is sort of cheaper and more efficient than developing within the European Union. But I think, you know, going back to your question, do we have the institution? I think we do have the institution. We have to make the best use of them. We have an internal market, which is, I think, working quite well. It's not working as well as it could. So there is still some, you know, distance to travel there. I think the market design, the fundamentals of the market design are fine in electricity. The clean energy package has improved some aspects. The gas package that the Commission will probably launch in the next year or so is going to look into what needs to be done on the gas side. But we still have challenges. I mean, the fact that we still spend at European level billions of euros in redispatch means that the market is not yet there. You would not expect this level of cost for redispatch. So we still need to deliver. But I think fundamentally the institutional setup is we have it. What I'm sometimes a bit disconcerted is by the fact that there are till now, with all the evidence that the market, the integrated European market, is delivering, there are second thoughts in some quarters about whether, you know, the future is a European-wide market or the future is back national market. And this is obviously a reason for concern. At least to me and to those who have seen, as I said, the benefits being delivered. And now we are seeing it delivered to final consumers. At the end of the day, you know, the proof of the pudding is on whether we can deliver the benefits to consumers.
I think Alberto underlines very forcefully the need for regulation which will enable things to happen. And that particularly applies to the gas infrastructures, where if you need to use blends of biogas with existing gas, you have to have tolerance levels in different countries to respect them. But in the end, you need a much wider internal market set of rules there to make it work. And on the issue of whether you want to make the market work or whether you want to intervene, there are plenty of politicians who you know, understandably react immediately to consumer concerns by saying, well, yes, the price is too high, we're going to regulate to keep it low. But some of those reactions are very short term. And if there's any serious thought, reflection about the challenge, it is how much capacity is available on a regional, if not a European level. How much trust do we have in the market working? Recently, there was a debate in Belgium about the insufficiency of electricity generation capacity, and the minister called upon the head of the companies concerned to give account for this lack of capacity. The French minister also made a comment that France would be disposed to help Belgium in its search for more energy security. The reality, however, is that the level of interconnection between Belgium and France is very significant. I'm not sure whether the precise figure is 20 or 30%, but it's between those two numbers. And therefore, talking about a national market for electricity in the core parts of the continent is no longer a reality. The reality is that if you let the markets work, it will result in a much higher level of energy security than most ministers believe. And I think we have a job of explaining to them and advocating why this market, this internal market concept is working.
Yeah. And probably a related job to do is to explain that you cannot really assess resource adequacy. So whether you have enough resources to meet demand at national level, if you do it that way, you're obviously going to end up with a very inefficient system where higher costs are actually borne by local consumers. You cannot then take, the alternative is to take account of what your neighbors can provide in an uncoordinated way. That may result in an ineffective, because you may end up double counting. You know, you count on your neighbor's resources, your neighbor is counting on your resources. When the crisis comes, usually the crisis is regional, and then you double count. So the only way of doing it in an efficient and effective way is doing it at regional level. And if I think of all the debate that has been in the negotiation of clean energy package, exactly where this adequacy assessment should fall, I think we still have to put some effort in explaining that, you know, the best way of serving our consumers, the consumers of Europe, is actually to take at least a regional approach. And that's what the market is supposed to deliver.
Great. To conclude, I would like to go back to a sort of paradigm shift that was previously outlined by Sir Philip while describing the energy transition as a 4D transition, because usually we refer to the energy transition in terms of decarbonization, digitalization, and decentralization, but adding democratization, mm-hmm. referring to the prosumers, is certainly an extremely important point. But while mentioning democratization, the Gilets Jaunes immediately came up in my mind, right? So
yeah.
Also the distributive effects of climate policies represent today a clearly crucial topic to be faced by politicians pushing for a greener energy system. My question to you would be the following. How can we, in the future years, and that will be really also a task of the new European institutions, ensure that the energy transition, that the decarbonization of the system happens in a socially fair way? Is that possible?
Well, of course, if you're an economist, you would immediately say, well, the markets will optimize the balance between demand and supply. However, we cannot guarantee in market functioning that there won't be inequalities, which is a strong argument for a social component of policy, which may not be an issue of energy policy alone, but of fiscal policy. Now, it's obvious, for example, that if you're living in a city and you're asked to, as a citizen, to help the energy transition, you can be persuaded to use a bike or the tram or the train or whatever it is. If you're in the country, you probably rely on your car to get a job, and you need that car, and also you need charging points if it's going to be an electric car, which are significantly frequent, and that's an issue for a challenge for not just for fiscal policy, but for infrastructure planning and urban planning. And there are vulnerable groups in society who are going to be very significantly disadvantaged by a higher cost on carbon, for example, which is more or less inevitable in a sense, because those who are using diesel cars and petrol cars at the moment in the country will be paying more for them. And those who are on low incomes everywhere pay a high proportion of their income on energy, and usually are not living in energy efficient homes. So there again, fiscal policy, infrastructure policy, also urban planning, energy regulations, issues of relationship between tenants and owners, to ensure that there is a complete and comprehensive view about how the energy transition can be effective, including the issue of dealing with inequality.
Alberto?
Yeah, I mean, clearly, as Philip said, you know, it's the issue transcends just the energy sector, or at least the energy market design, energy regulation. I think, however, I would say that having markets and markets delivering the correct price signal is a no regret. I mean, some of these price signals will be unaffordable for some part of the population, but that's where social policy should come in. The price signals give the right signals, for example, for an efficient use of energy. And we should not somehow water down this signal by, for example, providing lower prices for vulnerable consumers. Let's have these consumers facing the proper prices so they have the same incentives as anybody else to try to save energy, to go for energy efficiency solutions, but then take care of their vulnerability through other policies, other measures. So, you know, in a sense, you know, we're trying to promote efficiency, which delivers the least cost, but then we also take into account, I think this is sometimes the price regulation debate, which came up again with the clean energy package, sometimes, in my view, misses this point that, you know,
plus the environmental dimension, obviously, that is more energy has to be provided in an efficient way and consumed in an efficient way, but also we want to achieve the CO2 reduction objectives. And if we don't have the proper signals in the market, whether it's in taxation or in terms of trading schemes, then we're not going to achieve the objectives, and that's bad for everyone, including those who, in the short term, may feel disadvantaged, which, in my view, has to be dealt with by social policy.
Sir Philip Lowe, Alberto Potocnik, thank you very much for being with us. Thank you all for listening, and see you soon in the next Bruegel event and Bruegel podcast. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.